back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into post-Preakness time now and getting ready for election season. We're going to be out on the our own campaign trail next week doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. So nice, we're doing it twice. We're going to beat the Black Swan on Thursday in the afternoon, getting those some folks down in the Harbor East area. Then on Friday, we're out in Timonium at the racetrack at Nick's Grandstand Grill. A little OTB action. We'll catch up with Tommy over there and have some fun. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Lottery and Goodwill Industries. I had Lisa Rosiniak on this week, and also our friends at Window Nation with 2-for-1 windows going on. We're 2-for-1 on candidates around here. Don Mohler, we've made a serious commitment here locally in the city, in the county, in the surrounding area to really get involved in these elections and the conversations and folks you've endorsed, folks you haven't endorsed. I've sat down with Theroux and Brooke Learman this week at the Land of Kush running for office and talking about things, and we're going to continue to stimulate conversation around here. So, Don, I know the next contender here is someone that you know very well.
I know Scott Schellenberger, current state's attorney in Baltimore County for many, many years. And we always still, we try to be fair. We've had Scott's opponent, Robbie Leonard, on the show. We want folks to study elections and think and be thoughtful participants in the elective process. But in the spirit of transparency, and we shared this with Robbie, I have endorsed Scott. I think I've watched Scott's work for many years. I've worked along Scott, both as chief of staff to former county executives, and then as county executive myself. And I've concluded that the county should stay the course. So with that, we're going to ask Scott to sort of make his pitch to voters. But Scott Schellenberger, welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you both so much for having me on, Don, Nestor. It's so good to be here. Very happy to talk about the campaign and about my office and the good work that we've done.
Well, I'd say, well, I live in a county now, so I'm, you know, my ears are up. And the other thing is I haven't endorsed anybody and I haven't made my mind up. So honestly, and so that's where we are on it. Bring me up to speed. Moving back out to the county, I've taken my own level of, anytime you leave anywhere, you're, you know, oh, he's abandoned the city. I'm in the city 5 days a week. But I do know all the, and look, I've talked about this with four county executives, the city, the county, we're all in this together, right? I mean, like literally, and that's something that I think gets brought home every day, certainly in your office, right?
Absolutely. And Nestor, hopefully in 30 minutes, you'll make your decision after you hear what I have to say.
There'll be no endorsement given in this segment. Trust me. I told Brooke Learman's people the same thing. So, you know, yeah, I told Theroux, I told Robbie, I'm going to endorse Heather Mazier, but other than that, I'm not talking about anybody right
now. Gotcha. So tell you a little bit about myself and for all your folks to hear and see. I was first elected state's attorney in 2006. I was elected again in 2010, 2014, 2018, and obviously I'm running again. Just so you know, our office is very big. It's the fourth biggest state's attorney's office in the state. I have 61 lawyers, another 80+% support staff. I have a $11+ million budget sitting in front of the county council right now. Johnny O has already signed off on that budget. We handle over 30,000 cases a year in our office. Now, the good news is the vast majority of those cases are in our district court, which means they are misdemeanors, lower level crimes, certainly still serious crimes that need to be dealt with, like driving under the influence, shoplifting, some, you know, other cases like that. And the vast majority of folks who live in Baltimore County or are victims of crime in Baltimore County are going to be in our district court because that's where the most cases happen. We do have about 3,000 felonies a year. And obviously, your felonies are the big ones, your murder, your rape, your robbery. And unfortunately, now one that we never used to talk about, we talk about all the time, and that's carjacking.
That's we'll 3,000 a year. I'm just doing math. 365, that's 9 a day? 10 a day?
That's about right.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
It is. But, you know, we've been staying very consistent for the last 10 years. We've been just below 3,000 and just below above 3,000. I mean, like 3,100. We've been doing that for 10 years. So that those felonies are very consistent over the last 10 years. Now, obviously, if you do the math and you divide 61 lawyers into all those cases, we have some people who handle a lot of cases. So now in your district court, most of those cases only have one witness. So, you know, even though you might have 30 or 40 cases on your docket that day, you're also talking about one witness. In your typical driving under the influence, you have one police officer. In your typical shoplifting, you have one store security employee. Now, obviously, my more experienced prosecutors do the felonies, and they concentrate, obviously, on those more serious cases. So those numbers are way down. They're not doing 40 cases a day in our felony court. You know, each one of our experienced prosecutors is given the felonies, and obviously they involve a lot more work than in the district court.
Scott, you, one of my big questions, and because I find it unusual, although maybe it's not, because I think in terms of Montgomery County, John McCarthy's been there a long time. But in Baltimore County, we had Sandra O'Connor, who was in your role for 30 years. You've been there for 20, want to be there for at least 24. What does that, two parts to the question, I guess. What does the stability say about the county and county citizens and what they want? And is that stability a good thing or is it a liability?
So I think the stability is a good thing. Miss O'Connor hired me as a law clerk when I was 23 years old. I then spent the next 11 years moving my way up to become a lawyer in the district court, where I spent about a year, then in the juvenile division. Then I moved to the circuit court, where I worked in child abuse. I worked in automobile manslaughters. I worked in felony review. I worked in repeat offender. And eventually, that last 3 years, I was the head of the sexual assault child abuse unit. So when you work your way up through the office, you learn how to try a lot of different cases. And more importantly, you learn to watch how people manage people. One of the big things that Ms. O'Connor always did, and I have continued, is that we allow every one of our prosecutors complete discretion on what they do in a case, because we want to train them to be good prosecutors, but to make really, really good decisions about how they're going to handle their cases. And so I think that's really a good thing.
Now, okay, Scott, stop there for a second. I don't know that I've ever heard you talk about that, and I've known you for a long time. Why should Nestor and I, it sounds important to me, that thing you just said about giving your individual prosecutors full autonomy. Why should Nestor and I and our listeners care about that? Make that real for us.
So what you should care that for is the following. If you just create rules, you're not allowed to dismiss X kind of case, a burglary, you're not allowed to dismiss a robbery, then sometimes the wrong outcome can happen. My duty and the duty of my office, and particularly the 61 lawyers in our office, is every day we have one job, and that's to wake up and do the right thing. And sometimes doing the right thing is going all guns and putting a murderer away for the rest of their life. Sometimes doing the right thing is recognizing that a person who committed a minor offense might need drug treatment. And sometimes doing the right thing is looking at the victim of a crime and say, I'm sorry, but the facts that you have described to me do not amount to a criminal case, and we are not going to go forward in Baltimore County. And what I want people to know is that we want our people to always do the right thing. And sometimes that means not going forward in a case. And that's where, you know, I can be criticized, because I've been making those decisions and having my people make those decisions since 2007. My opponent has not. It's easy to criticize folks when you haven't had to sit at the table and tell someone what you're going to do with a case. I tell everybody that pretty much every day we upset somebody that we deal with. Sometimes it's the judge, sometimes it's the defense lawyer, sometimes it's the police officer, and sometimes it's the victim. But that's what's going to happen when you're always doing the right thing.
Scott, you know the major issue, and again, we had your opponent on, and you know that one of the major issues, not only in your race, but in state's attorneys' races all over the nation, is this issue of the relationship between the state's attorney's office and the police department and the citizenry. And one of the charges leveled against you by those who are unhappy with the way you've run the office is that Scott Schellenberger is too cozy with police, and that's not a good thing for the citizens. So I want to sit back and allow you to respond to the charge that you're too cozy with the police.
Sure. So first of all, a prosecutor's office needs to have a good relationship with their police department, because there needs to be communication back and forth, and there needs to be a way for them to respect us when we say, go out and do these five things in this murder case because you didn't finish everything we needed. There are days where they will bring a case to us and we'll say, no, I'm sorry, you don't have enough. But for your viewers to know, here is a list of 18 police officers who my office has prosecuted in the last 10 years, including authorizing charges against the head of the FOP when he was the head of the FOP and saying, yes, those charges should be filed. So what we do every day now with regard to the head of the FOP, we then did what we consider to be the right thing, and that is we brought somebody in from the outside to prosecute it. But I authorized those charges and then asked an outside prosecutor to come in so that there is no appearance of impropriety. But these other 17 police officers, my deputy prosecuted them because we want good police officers on our force. And we recognize, and even the FOP recognizes, the Fraternal Order of Police, that they don't want bad police officers on the force. So this concept that I'm in bed with the FOP when, honestly, I added up how much money they've given me in the last 20 years, and it's less than $10,000. And you know, if anybody thinks that that kind of money can buy my allegiance, they're wrong. But certainly these two pages of people that we prosecuted certainly should convince everybody that we don't care who you are. We care what you did. And if you committed a crime, we're going to prosecute you.
Scott Schellenberger is our guest. I want to follow up on that, because the question about clearances and stuff like that from a crime standpoint in the city. And I talked to Theroux the other day, and we've talked to all sorts of people about crime in the city and policing. The relationship in prosecuting these people, we're watching this television show now that's not fictional, by the way, right? We have David Simon on, that it's impossible to prosecute a police officer. A lot of people believe that, right?
I know people believe it, but it's we've done it. One of the first cases that we had, and one of the worst, was James Laborde killed Christopher Brown because he threw a rock at his door. We prosecuted that case. I had my best prosecutor on it. We went all out for it, and the jury found him not guilty. So, I mean, that does in fact happen. But we still think it's important that we do our job by making sure we go forward in these cases. But under our Constitution, the citizens, 12 citizens from Baltimore County, are the ones that get to decide. Now, most of these other 18, other than James Laborde and Chris Spivey, were in fact convicted of the crimes that they were charged with. But I live and breathe by a system that says the juries ultimately get to decide. And even though I may disagree with their decision in some cases, I certainly respect and abide by what they did.
Scott, I think you've been involved, and again, give you an opportunity to maybe give us the four dummies version. This whole issue of criminal justice reform, You've actually had some involvement in that. And I think there was even an op-ed along the way you penned jointly with a public defender where you actually went to Annapolis to fight for justice reinvention, criminal justice reform. Talk about your involvement in that issue and what it should look like.
Sure. So several years ago, we formed a commission called the Justice Reinvestment Act. And we had a reform committee that looked at criminal justice and some of the changes that might need to happen. I was the state's attorney represented for the entire state on that committee. And we came out with, I think, about 17 reform ideas that we went down to Annapolis and asked them to enact. I was one of the lone state's attorneys who testified in favor of it. You mentioned the op-ed with the public defender. Have it right here. Scott Schellenberg and Paul DeWolf. And the title in the op-ed, it was in February of 2016 in the Baltimore Sun, Maryland public defender, prosecutor, both back criminal justice reforms. So this concept that I'm some Neanderthal who only wants to put people in jail is completely wrong. I support reasonable reforms. So let me tell you about some of the ones that I have supported over the years. My office, we created a marijuana diversion program before anybody, this was a decade ago, before anyone in the General Assembly was talking about decriminalizing marijuana. Our diversion was possession, first time, community service, and a educational class one afternoon, and we dismissed the charges. We did that for 10 years before the legislature sought to change the marijuana laws. In 2015, we expanded that to other drugs. Now, the harder drugs, we required more of a treatment program than we did with the marijuana.
By the way, has marijuana been a problem in Baltimore County now that I smell it everywhere and it's sort of almost ubiquitous? Has that affected crime? Because, I mean, obviously over the last 15 years, when you sat in that seat to begin with, probably never would have thought that you could drive up Bel Air Road or Harford Road or York Road and stop off with a $100 card and an appointment and have medical marijuana.
So marijuana is still a problem, and it always will be if they tax it too much when they legalize it, because they won't get rid of the black market. But yes, marijuana does, and I know people don't believe this, but it does in fact lead to violent crime. Remember the murder we had just last year at the Trader Joe's? Guess what they were doing? It was a marijuana deal gone bad, and one person killed another because of the marijuana deal. You may remember the young man who was shot outside the new apartment complex on Washington and Susquehanna Avenue in Towson. When they went into his apartment, it was loaded with marijuana, and we believe he was killed over a marijuana deal. So it is a problem.
There still is a black market for this.
Right. And that's why I know we're getting into a lot of subjects all at once.
That's what we do here.
That's why I have written to the legislature and say, hey, whatever you do about marijuana, I'll leave that up to you. But you must not overtax it or you will not get rid of the black market. And if you don't get rid of the black market, we're going to still see violence surrounding marijuana. But let me tell you about
the trafficking of it, not the use of it specifically, correct?
Correct.
Fair enough. Correct. Okay, fair enough.
So a couple other reforms I've supported. In 2021, we have launched drug courts in our district court and our circuit court that focuses greatly on drug treatment and reduced sentences if we even prosecute at all. I already mentioned in 2016, I supported the Justice Reform Act. And I just checked my notes. There's actually 19 reforms the whole concept from that act was that prison should be used for violent criminals and that reentry programs need to be developed. I was on the governor's commission to reform pretrial so that more people would get out on bail. I was on the Justice Reinvestment Coordinating Council. I was on the DNA Kit Task Force. I was on the erroneous conviction task force, where Dolores Kelly and I actually wrote the bill that compensated people like Kirk Bloodsworth, who had been wrongly convicted. And in fact, Kirk Bloodsworth was the first person awarded money under that statute. I actually personally appeared at that hearing to not oppose his request. So this concept that I'm some kind of Neanderthal, honestly, Nestor Don, when I looked at this, I was like, who is this guy who helped work on all these things? But again, they were all reasonable reforms that had nothing to do with the thing I talk most about, and that is violent crime and the need for punishment there. You have to separate out these issues so that, you know, you can talk about them in different fashions.
Do too many of our citizens have guns?
Guns are a problem, but it's in our Constitution. In 2014, I sat next to Governor O'Malley and our lieutenant governor, and I testified in favor of the Gun Safety Act. I was, again, if I recall, I believe the governor testified for 4 minutes. The lieutenant governor testified, Anthony Brown, for 4 minutes. I was up testifying and answering questions for well over an hour. I was the third witness to testify in favor of that act and answered a lot of very difficult questions. And I do believe that that safety act did help us a lot. But, you know, there's still a lot of guns out there. And what I do is I prosecute bad guys with guns, not people who constitutionally have a right to gun. What I tell everybody is this: somewhere between the Second Amendment and between a young man walking into an elementary school and executing 20 people, there is a reasonable place to land. Somewhere between those two places. And I believe in the Second Amendment, but I also believe that 20-year-olds shouldn't be able to walk into an elementary school and kill people. And I believe there's a way to strike a reasonable balance.
Yeah, Nestor and I talked in an earlier segment about the insanity of an 18-year-old being able to walk into a grocery store with assault weapon after assault weapon after assault weapon.
And the fact that it happens in Buffalo means it can happen in Timonium. It's not happen anywhere.
It's not a civilized society. Hey, Scott, before we let you get out of here, an issue that also, not just in your office, all across the country, so this issue of sexual assault and rape kits and people thinking that traditionally the men in office have been insensitive to this issue and that the rape kit case thing has been inexcusable. Give us an update on those two issues.
So what a lot of people don't realize is that the preparation of a DNA kit is very time-consuming, and it takes a lot of work. So when the rape kits were first really developed, because it was a limited resource to be able to analyze them, we candidly were picking cases that involved strangers, where, you know, if the people knew each other and identity wasn't an issue, we weren't necessarily testing those kits. I got on the rape kit committee, and I had my eyes opened up from a national presenter who talked about the fact that just because this defendant raped someone he knew or is alleged to have raped someone he knew doesn't mean that he didn't one time rape someone who was a stranger in a more violent fashion. And so when I got that education, what I did was I said, we need to change how we do things. So in 2017, and here's my written testimony, but folks can go down and look in Annapolis to the legislation, Google Maryland legislature, then go to Rape Kits 2017. I was the main witness asking for a law requiring rape kits to be saved for 20 years, because unfortunately, what was happening in Baltimore County and a lot of places is we were destroying them. And as soon as I found that out, I made that stop. And then I went down and I changed the law. So the other thing we did was, because I was enlightened as to this concept that just because they know each other doesn't mean he didn't do a stranger, we got a grant from a foundation, and we found out that we had 1,511 untested kits in our inventory. To date, we've had 480 of them tested, and we have 302 of them at a private lab that we are paying to be tested. They're sitting there right now or in the process of getting tested. So that means we're up to half of our rape kits that are being taken care of. And we currently have 100 of them that are in the process, and a number of 75 cold case slides that GBMC, and we could do a whole podcast on Dr. Breitnecker, who was saving evidence in rape cases 20 years before DNA testing was even invented. So we have made a lot of progress, and we're pushing hard to get all those kits done. What we do is, when we have a kit that's ready to go to the lab, we have our friends and advocates at the Rape Crisis Center go out and speak to the victim to see if they want their case to continue to be analyzed. And so we took that notification away from the police and gave it to the Rape Crisis people, because they know how best to approach victims from a year ago or 2 years ago when they're told your kit's ready to be tested. So we've made a lot of progress here. And I continue to hope that we continue to make progress. And just so you know, even though we're testing these old kits, going forward, we're testing all the new kits. We're doing well in that area. There was a problem many years ago, but we've made a lot of progress.
Appreciate that update, Scott. We appreciate you coming on. Appreciate your service to the county and for coming on and speaking about all these issues. They're always all the issues that hit your desk are pretty tough. They involve crime, right?
They really are. And that's why what I like to tell everybody is, this is not a job to learn on the job. This is a place where you have to know what you're doing to manage 60 lawyers, 80 support staff, and have to run all these programs. You need to know what you're doing here. And I had a tremendous lot of experience as a prosecutor before I even decided to run. And I think that's a really important factor, particularly nowadays when you have so many more complicating issues like DNA, like rape kits, like body cameras. All these things are things that are in my wheelhouse and not in anyone else's.
Thank you, Scott. You know, Nestor, again, we should, in every one of these segments that we do on elections, remind folks, very unusual, July the 19th, you will be voting in the middle of summer vacation. July 12th, last date to request a mail-in ballot. There will be plenty of opportunities for early vote. And as we always say, Nestor, democracy is not
A spectator sport, of course. He is Don Mohler. Appreciate Scott Schellenberger for being our guest here. Baltimore Positive is rolling along. Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill. And Window Nation moves next week to the Black Swan for a Thursday afternoon chat. And then on Friday, we're going to be doing fun. Crab cakes, OTB, Nick's Grandstand Grill. Come on out to Timonium. We're all fond of Baltimore County here. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.